Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety, where each week we delve into little-known healthcare and hospital hazards, as well as other fringe topics that affect your health and well-being. I'm so happy you've taken the time to join me, and today I have lots to share with you. So, let's dig right in, shall we? Well, today I have an author to share with you with a topic that hits close to home for me, and that is caregiving. My very special guest is Joy Johnston. Her collection of essays about family caregiving, titled The Reluctant Caregiver, received a gold medal at the 2018 IPPI Awards. She received the 2015 Rick Bragg Prize for Nonfiction from the Atlanta Writers Club. Her work has been published in Chicken Soup for the Soul and other anthologies. She writes about dementia and caregiving on her blog, The Memories Project. And after our interview, you can find out more about Joy at her website, joyjohnston.com. And I just know that her words of wisdom will be comforting and perhaps eye-opening for some, so let's get going. Welcome to the network, Joy.
Thanks, Pat. I appreciate it.
I appreciate having you too, a kindred spirit, an author, and someone who's been through it. So I'm really excited about talking through this today. And I'm really looking forward to your perceptions on caregiving, because I didn't mention this to you previously, but I just spent the last 9 years caring for my mom, who back in 2008 was in hospital for a shoulder surgery and was having a heart attack in the post-op recovery room that went undiagnosed for 9 hours. And yeah, this permanently compromised her health to the point that I too stopped my career to care for her. So your book title, The Reluctant Caregiver, kind of resonates with me. So maybe for you, let's look back a bit in order to find out why you wrote your book. Give us a brief peek into your journey with both your dad and then your mom.
So my caregiving journey began with my father. He had Alzheimer's. I was in my mid-30s and, you know, really focused on my career. My parents had been in good health up until that point. And then my father started exhibiting symptoms of dementia. And, of course, it's kind of a slow, gradual process. But then it became very clear that my father wasn't going to be able to live at home anymore. My father wasn't going to be able to care for him anymore. And I was a long-distance caregiver at that point. So my father retired to New Mexico, and I was with Atlanta, Georgia. So that's a long haul back and forth to visit. So that definitely complicated the caregiving issues. So my father spent the last year of his life in the memory care center. It was almost a mixed blessing, his passing, because anyone who has experienced a family member who has Alzheimer's, it's so cruel. The decline is so cruel. And I finally felt like my dad was free once he passed. So then just 6 months after my father died, I was still grieving, trying to process all of that. My mother suddenly got sick. My mother, who had always been in great health, was diagnosed with colon cancer, had to have emergency surgery on her birthday, her 75th birthday. And all of a sudden, I'm an only child, no other relatives nearby. I had to abandon my life and go take care of her. And, you know, I didn't resent that, but I was not prepared to be a full-time caregiver.
See, that's so interesting that you say that you didn't resent it. I didn't resent it either, but boy, it stops you in your tracks and changes your whole life. And also, as you said, your mom was a vibrant person, and that to watch someone who looked after you all these years suddenly become you know, in a role reversal situation, that's stunning for you as the caretaker.
Yes, after all that time and watching my mother care for my father, and she did a wonderful job, but we were total opposites when it comes to personality and when it comes to perspectives on healthcare and end-of-life care, at least for my father. After my mom saw my father, you know, suffer in the last few months of his life, she decided for herself that she didn't want to prolong any kind of end-of-life heroic measures. So I was very thankful for that. We butted heads when it came to making those choices for my father, and that created tension between us. And so then when I moved on to have to take care of her and help her make those decisions and become her medical power of attorney, it was a total role reversal, as you said.
You know, it's interesting that people are so fearful to have these end-of-life conversations when they're still young with their children or the people who may be looking after them, because something like that then could have helped you and your mom navigate your dad through your dad's wishes had he been able to have that conversation with you much earlier.
Oh, yes, I wish we had. And this is one of my areas of advocacy. Please talk to your family about these important decisions. End-of-life care, and also if you're incapacitated for any reason, it could happen at any age, it could be a car accident, anything, you need to have these, your choices written down, and you need to let your family know what you want to have done.
Absolutely. At the very minimum, a healthcare power of attorney. So you can have that conversation with that person. And, you know, I think people are fearful like, oh, that's going to, they're going to be able to make decisions for me or get into my bank account and I could never change that person. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions surrounding, especially that healthcare power of attorney.
There is. And every time I try to bring it up with my parents, my mom would dismiss it with the, you know, common refrain, we're not dead yet. You know, as if I was trying to encourage them.
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was, you know, to have that important discussion.
Well, since we're talking about it, do you have any ways that maybe a child, an adult child, could bring that up without it sound like that you're wanting to off your parents? How do you bring that up to delicately get through that conversation?
Some things I suggest are taking advantage of the holidays when ideally family is together. Go ahead and bring it up. Maybe if you have siblings, you can kind of join together, have a support system there, and use what works with your family. If humor works, then tell them, you know, hey, you don't want to end up like Aunt Edna in that horrible nursing home, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so that might not work for every family. For other families, it might be, you know, you take a more spiritual approach. You just need to use whatever works in your family.
Exactly. So whatever works, let's say, let's not fear it and be afraid of it, because I think the consequence is a whole lot worse, as you just experienced with your mom, trying to make decisions and no one really knows what the person wants. And now you two are left trying to figure out how to best navigate through that. So was there a moment that caused you to put pen to paper and write about your experience? Why did you decide to write about it?
Well, I'd written an essay that did win an award, Greetings from the Nursing Home, which won the Rick Brack Prize from the Atlanta Writers Club. And that was about my father's experience in the nursing home. And so I had started writing during the caregiving journey as almost a form of therapy. And so I continued that through my mother's experience. I had actually started a blog called The Memories Project right after my father died. And I was recording family memories on that blog. And then about halfway through the year, that's when my mother became sick. And then it became more of a active caregiving focus, advocacy, and just writing about my, you know, triumphs and frustrations as a family caregiver. So I wrote personal essays, and they generated a lot of feedback. One of the most talked about ones was why dying at home isn't all that it's cracked up to be. And it was a bit of a harsh assessment of my mother's experience with home hospice, which wasn't good. And I think hospice is great, generally speaking. I support dying at home. I think home hospice workers are generally wonderful people. But unfortunately, my mother's experience wasn't good, and I felt the need to express that. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised at how many people said, same thing happened to my mother or my father, and, you know, I felt like I was the only one. So I really felt inspired by that feedback to keep going and to be an honest voice for family caregivers.
Thank you for that. I noticed that your style was just out there, no nonsense, it is what it is, and you weren't trying to hide any of the truth. I did the same thing when my mom was going through this process, but I chronicled all of it through my radio show. So as these bizarre and untoward events were happening, whether it was in hospitals or doctor's offices or rehabs or nursing homes, the next week I was on the air talking about it, and the same reaction, people would call me and come up to me at speaking events. Yes, I've been through this as well. So thank you for your honesty. I think we need more of that if we are going to make a change in this whole system.
I agree. We really need a wake-up call for our country when it comes to caregiving issues. Mm-hmm. The population is rapidly aging. We do not have nearly enough professional caregivers or family members who can, you know, sacrifice their careers or their lives to take care of their aging family members. We really need to address this issue head on, not just the government, but, you know, private organizations, healthcare organizations. We really need a bipartisan effort. You know, it's a bipartisan issue. Aging, dying with dignity should be a bipartisan issue.
Well, I agree with you absolutely. And so with people like yourself, maybe we could make some headway here. And you know what I really appreciated about you? Your chapter titles really give away the fact that you have a sense of humor, or appeared to have a sense of humor about all of this. I appreciated that. It wasn't the typical chapter titles. And you talked about the one of changing a colostomy bag. My dad passed away of colon cancer, and same kind of situation, stage 4, and he had his surgery on my birthday. So we have some similarities. And thankfully for my brother, he was able to do all of that changing of that colostomy bag. It was something I didn't have to deal with. But yeah, I mean, you lay it all out there, and you've really been through some kind of harrowing experiences. Talk about some of them, and maybe framed around a brand new caregiver that you're just thrown into this role. How do you deal with that?
Well, for me, I use online research and really gained a lot more wisdom from that than I did medical professionals. Because let's face it, they're busy. They don't have time to fully train a family caregiver on how to care for their loved one. And so I learned how to change a colostomy bag watching a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. This gentleman was very brave to put himself out there and show exactly how to do it. And I'm forever grateful for him.
Wow.
I ended up being able to change a colostomy bag better than the nurses could. Mm-hmm. And the doctor told me, my mother's oncologist told me that they don't provide training in that area as extensively as they used to. So there's a education gap there. They cover it in one day in nursing school versus there used to be specialties, ostomy nurses, mm-hmm. that would care for patients like that full time. So for family caregivers that are feeling nervous about being thrown into a situation like that, believe in yourself. You can do it. I mean, I had no medical background whatsoever, and I just pushed through. And I made mistakes along the way, but I ended up being a quite competent family caregiver, and I'm proud of that.
Mm-hmm. As you should, because it was self-trained. And, you know, it's one of those things like diving off the deep end. You're up on the top of the diving board, and someone pulls the stairs out from you. You got to, yeah. Close your nose, close your eyes. What do you have to do? And just jump in and deal with it once you're in the water. So they sent my mom home with a stage 4 pressure sore and said, see you next week. So, yeah, I became a bed sore guru. So, again, like you say, online, I learned a lot and studied, and through mistakes, you come out the other end and healed that bed sore. So, Yeah, you're pretty much left out there by yourself. So we really do need some kind of program or something to help train these family caregivers if, in fact, we don't have enough medically trained folks to help out. And you mentioned something also in your book about rural caregiving, where you're not in a big city, and that's a whole different ballgame.
Yes, that was a real challenge. First of all, the lack of medical choice when it comes to doctors, hospitals, specialists, you're really limited in choice. And that can make a huge difference in the quality of care. And then a lot of times you end up having to be transferred to a hospital in a bigger city because the small town hospital cannot care for complex cases. That's what happened to my mother. She ended up getting an hour and a half ambulance ride on her birthday to go from Ruidoso, New Mexico to Roswell, where they could treat her and perform the emergency surgery. It was a holiday weekend. So that really complicated the caregiving issue for me because I ended up having to live out of a hotel room for a couple of months because it was too much of a distance to go back and forth to my parents' home and to visit my mother, who was at the hospital, and then a rehab center for 2 months because she developed complications, including blood clots.
Wow. And, you know, also in a small community like that, your pool of potential caregivers within, say, a nursing home diminishes. And so I don't mean this to sound rude, but, you know, you might have somebody who worked at McDonald's yesterday and now they're caring for your parent with a complex medical situation simply because there's not enough people to draw from locally.
Absolutely. And that was the real issue with home health care and home hospice. It was the same group in the small town. They had several very hardworking people, but they had way too many patients to visit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my mother didn't get a visit every day when she was in the latter stages of her life and actively dying. Her pain medication ended up lagging. It was difficult to get the morphine, because they didn't have a huge stockpile on hand in the area. So those were real challenges. And then on my father's side, there was no memory care center anywhere near where my parents lived. So again, my father had to go to Roswell, and my mother had to take a bus an hour and a half each way to visit him in the memory care center there.
Oh my gosh.
So there was some real challenge with rural caregiving.
You even mentioned something about aliens, right?
Yes, Ross. I have to admit, I mean, you know, I know Roswell is probably a lovely town with good people, but it's going to leave a bad taste in my mouth forever.
I'm sure.
Because of my parents' experiences.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I don't know what the lesson learned there is. Don't live near a small city. I mean, I don't really know what the solution to that is.
Yeah, you know, people want to age in place, and if they've always lived in a small town, I hope that we can accommodate them, but it is a challenge. Do we, you know, provide incentives for young doctors to set up shop in a rural area, and you know, is that going to work? And it's a tough situation to, you know, really bring in quality caregivers, as you mentioned. I talked to the home hospice group in Ruidoso, and they said, yeah, they were really struggling to find quality providers.
Mm-hmm. We've got well-meaning people, but the training is just severely lacking.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had to leave a job that you had just begun and thought maybe after your dad passed, you were on your way to kind of regaining some normalcy. And then you had to leave your job. Is that correct?
Yeah, I had started, and I was only 2 months into the new job when my mother got sick. So I didn't have any FMLA, you know, benefits or PTO, anything like that. So I really just had to cut my losses, but I had no choice. And I, you know, I don't regret the choice because I would do the same thing again.
I say the same thing, but it devastates you. I had to quit a career. And so what do people do then financially? What's the solution?
Yes, that's the devastating part. And people don't want to talk about it. But the financial impact of a family caregiver who has to give up a career to take care of a loved one is absolutely devastating.
Yep.
And I ran up a lot of credit card debt. I also, which with my mother's blessing, I also, you know, tapped into her savings and used some of that to live on while I was caring for her. Mm-hmm. I picked up some online writing jobs here and there, but nowhere close to what I was earning full time.
Yep.
And it took me over a year to secure full time employment again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to affect me the rest of my life. That's, you know, 401k contributions that are gone, you know, never going to be able to get back. And I still have debt that I'm paying off from that time period.
I hear what you're saying. You will live with the consequence for the rest of your life. And as you say, you would do it again.
Yes. And, you know, most family caregivers would. But we need support. You know, it's unbelievable the amount of money and time worked, hours worked, that family caregivers put in, don't get paid for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the country just kind of turns a blind eye to that. But, you know, with you, I think it really hits home, you know, that we need to make changes.
I agree with you, and I think anyone who has gone through this process will agree as well. So hopefully there's some solutions we can come up with. As we begin to wrap up, let's maybe have you share what you think might be the biggest or the most important piece of advice you would give to anyone who is currently in that caregiver role.
Well, my biggest piece of advice is don't get too caught up in the medical aspect of caregiving, that you miss those opportunities to bond with your loved ones, because they may not be with you that much longer, and you will regret not spending the quality time with them and making those memories while you still have them. That is my biggest regret. I was so focused on trying to be a good caregiver for my mother and get all the medical aspects of caregiving down and being efficient that I missed out on just spending time with her, talking about recording family stories. That's probably the biggest thing that I wish I had done. And so even though I know I was a good caregiver, I just wish I'd had the opportunity to just spend quality time with her.
Wow.
So I encourage everyone to do that.
It's like you're in my brain. Same thing. It's kind of getting a little emotional. Yeah, you get so caught up in the busyness of it that you don't take the time to realize that the time is short. So just hang out and be and spend and talk. Excellent advice. I've not had anyone ever say that before, but it's huge. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. So we've danced around a giant topic here just to touch a lot of points of it. And your book is important. It's titled The Reluctant Caregiver. So share with us where folks can find out more about you, your different projects, and where they can purchase the book.
You can go to my website, which is joyjohnston.com. And there's an Amazon link. You can buy it also on any major online retailer. And it's also available in print, a paperback version on Amazon. And yes, you can find out more about me on my website. You can see my award, my gold medal that I just won, which I'm excited about. Most importantly, you can contact me.
All right, so you are really dedicated to this. Joy Johnston. The book is titled The Reluctant Caregiver. The website is joyjohnston.com, J-O-Y-J-O-H-N-S-T-O-N, joyjohnston.com. Joy, when I saw your website, I'm like, yes, I've got to share you with others because there's so much to know and feel and get out there with this topic. So thank you so much for all you do, and thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you for having me, Pat.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Hi there. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, the voice of Mrs. Green on the airwaves. Mrs. Green's World is a global movement of ideas and actions made up of people who care about their own health and the health of this planet. If you're interested in things like clean water, clean air, clean oceans, or would like to know more about just what it means to live a sustainable life, you will love to hear what our guests from all over the world have to say. Please visit our website at mrsgreensworld.com to learn more and to become a part of our world.
Wow. Once again, We're out of time. I don't know how that happened so quickly, but we are not out of plenty to talk about. So come back next week, where you can find us every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock in Cleveland, Ohio, at WHKW, that's AM 1220, and WHKZ, AM 1440, as well as Sunday evening in Cleveland at 6 o'clock at WHK, that's AM 1420. We're also online at iHeartRadio. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or just visit two websites, speakupandstayalive.com or speakuptalkradio.com. Well, I'm happy you shared today with me, and I hope you come back next week. So until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, the voice for informed choice. Are you looking for a speaker for your next event who's fun, fast-paced, enlightening, and did I mention life-saving? Then you need me, Pat Rulo, healthcare safety expert, patient advocate, and radio host. Visit speakupandstayalive.com or call 440-725-5462. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. Call 440-725-5462 or visit speakupandstayalive.com.